Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Horror Weekly, Horror's Scariest Opening Scenes. We asked 500,000 horror fans online what the most frightening first minutes of horror movies are, and we're here with their answers and ours. I'm going to flip the script from how we usually do it and give my personal pick first, and then we're going to break down the voting heading from the lower tier hundreds of votes to movies that got thousands of votes to the ultimate winner. And I don't think the winner is going to be that big a surprise, but the movies that were nudging close to the winner were kind of surprising to me. And also there were a few controversies that I did not expect. But let's start with a movie that is so near and dear to my heart and didn't get any votes, which I'm not hurt by, because honestly, I think it's a movie that not many people remember anymore. And also, it's a pretty stylized opening, so it's kind of like a take it or leave it kind of thing in terms of how it would impact you. It's not like the kind of opening like Scream would have that's almost universally acclaimed. This, I can see how this one is hit or miss, but I fucking loved it. So the movie I'm talking about is 1981's Wolfen. Wolfen, if you haven't seen it, it's a horror movie directed by Michael Wadley. It's based on Whitley Strieber's novel of the same name, and it stars Albert Finney, Diane Venora, Gregory Hines, and Edward James Olmos. So the synopsis of this movie is it follows a city cop who has been assigned to uncover what is behind a series of vicious murders. Originally, it is believed the murders are animal attacks until the cop discovers a legend about wolf spirits. Now, Wolfen is pretty legendarily hard to categorize. Every time we do a post on the Horror Weekly pages about your favorite werewolf movies, I almost always mention this one, and I almost always get comments back saying it's not a werewolf movie, which technically is true. I'm not even going to fight about it. There's no like transformational scenes. But it definitely plays and has the spirit of the werewolf genre. But one of the things I love about the opening of this movie is it plays much, much more like a slasher. And I really do, in my heart of hearts, think of Wolfen as like a pseudo slasher. And you'll see what I mean when we get to how the opening scene plays out. But the slashing weapon in here is teeth. And, you know, you're going to say, well, that could be Jaws or that could be whatever. Sure, normally, but the kills in this movie operate like slashings. There are sudden lunges from the wolves, and all of a sudden there are lopped off hands and lopped off heads. The difference in how these go down and how you would achieve them with like a machete visually is almost the same to me. But anyway, this movie is gorgeous and weird and scared the hell out of me when I was a kid. So the way this opens is we've got this sweep across the New York skyline, like landscape, and we notice that there are two people way up high on top of I think it's called a truss of the top of the bridge, and you're looking down across New York, and one of the people up there is holding a bird, the other one's doing some kind of weird, you know, weapon slingshotty like practice moves, and then the camera sweeps down across the city and shows these really desolate landscapes, like a real Cabrini green kind of feel, and just, you know, completely abandoned, decrepit buildings, and just a kind of like a terrible orangey, dirtish landscape. And you start hearing this countdown, like a 10, 9, 8. And then you realize that you're about to watch the demolition of a building. And the weird thing about this is Wolfen is really, at its base, a movie about civilization versus nature, and that nature will eventually overtake everything and bring its own kind of order where you try to stamp your own order. And, you know, in a time where I'm recording this, where we have superstorms and superheated hurricanes and, you know, floods on epic scales and just wreckage, mad wreckage all over the place, a movie that's really hinting that this is coming, that nature is coming for civilization is kind of haunting. It's weird that this movie got relevant, because as much as I love this movie, one of my assumptions was when I rewatched it recently is that it would date poorly, but I don't think it does. I think this movie has an intelligence at its heart that is impossible to bound in with a simple thing like dumb time changes. But anyway, we go to where the demolition of the building was, and there's a groundbreaking, and there's like this wealthy entrepreneur who comes from a super wealthy family who is at a groundbreaking, and basically they're breaking the city down the way they want it, and they're building it back up the way they want it. Total human pride, right? Throwing up skyscrapers everywhere. And after the groundbreaking ceremony, this guy heads off with his, I don't know if it's his girlfriend or wife, but heads off with his significant other and her dog in their huge limo. And they head out, night falls. Actually, it's really late. It's like 6 a.m., I think, one of the security people that's, you know, help guarding this captain of industry, because he's got a whole security team on remote, you know, tracking his movements and rerouting when he gets to his penthouse and all the usual things you just expect from someone living like, you know, Elon Musk's lifestyle. So this guy drives off into the night, and then he diverts to go to Battery Park. And the reason he wants to go there, his girlfriend's in the limo doing cocaine. He wants to go and just visit where the first ever windmill ever made in America, who in this movie is made by his, I don't know, great-great-great-grandfather or whatever, one of his ancestors. There's a replica built and placed in Battery Park, and this guy just gets it in his mind to go visit it, which throws his security team off. They don't want him visiting Battery Park at 6 in the morning, but they can't stop him. He does what he wants. So he's heading there, and as he's driving, you see the people that we saw at the beginning on top of the bridge. They're watching his car proceed towards this area, and they throw a bottle at the window of it. And I weirdly take this now. I didn't realize it. I thought it was just hostility when I first watched this movie. I take it as they were trying to warn him not to go to this area. But he doesn't care. He's got his security detail. He's only got one, his driver, with him. But like, he's got a security detail on call who can, you know, arrive in quick time. So he gets there, and this is it. This is why this movie is here. There are so many things that happen in the next 2 minutes of this film that are remarkable, absolutely remarkable. First of all, the setting. This Battery Park setting, there's an installation they've got at the park that's just huge wind chimes, and I have never forgotten the sound of these wind chimes as like the horror, as the you start to realize something's badly wrong and these people are in danger, and then the horrors ensued. And in the background, there's just this tinkling of the wind chimes, like haunting. It'd be like something Edgar Allan Poe would write with like bells. It's just remarkable. And the windmill itself there is just a brilliant touch, because it's not the way you think of a windmill. I can't even describe to you how this thing is built. You'd have to watch the movie. There's no way for me to do it on a podcast. But it doesn't look like a typical windmill. It's got sails, like a ship sails. And in the sails, there are all these creepy shadows, some from the park and then some from things worse that are lurking. And this thing spinning and creaking in the middle of this empty park right before dawn when it's still pitch black. Oh, just the whole setting is just phenomenal. And then you start to realize we get this incredible POV shots of them being stalked, the couple being stalked by the wolfen. And a couple things happen here. First of all, they're sort of seeing, I'm going to call it predator vision, but I don't get mad at me. I think it's better than predator vision. There's something way more haunting about the way these creatures see, but they don't see the way we see. So we're cutting to shots of how they're seeing things with these weird color changes to the park when you're looking at it through their eyes. Very alien feeling. And then we realize, then you realize as it cuts, we're seeing multiple POVs, and we're looking at the couple from below, beneath like a, in a sewer, like through the grating. We're seeing low down between hiding behind park benches. We're seeing from far away. They have this couple surrounded, and they are a wolf pack, and they are the best hunters on earth. So these people are in big trouble. Their driver is walking around trying to like not look at them while they flirt and play like rich people hide and seek. The girl's totally high, right? So, and meanwhile, as the wolfen close in, the fancy dog, I don't know what breed it is, but it's the typical luxury dog, pretty good sized dog, takes a couple sniffs of the area, looks around, realizes the wolf in there, and then he just jets. So he or she, I don't know who it is, that dog just jets. That dog is out, which is, it reminds me of in Halloween, when the kid that's being babysat, just the Michael Myers is in the closet. He comes out, attacks the babysitter. The kid just takes off, runs down the stairs, runs past, I think the character's name is Dave, the boyfriend. And he's like, "You're going to die, Dave," and just gets out and exits the movie, never to be seen again in that movie. That's what this dog does. Just like, I love when a character, animal or human, doesn't matter, makes a super wise decision. So that dog is out. Then the wolfen close in. They take out the driver first, and they lock eyes with him, and he locks eyes with us, locks eyes with the camera, but we're now seeing through his hunter's eyes. And he looks, he raises his gun to defend himself, and then you realize this is the raptor strategy from Clever Girl moment of Jurassic Park. The other wolfen takes him from the side where he isn't seeing it and slashes and severs his hand with the gun in it, which drops to the ground. And then he's out. We'll come back to him in a second. And then they converge. They've taken him out silently, so the couple still doesn't know. They're still like flirting and, you know, whatever. And then the rich guy, I think his name is Vanderweer, sees something. He clocks that something is wrong. He calls to her in this really almost, it gave me chills watching it, because it's precisely how you would react in the moment if you were being confronted by animals and you wanted to alert someone that there was trouble, but you didn't want to make a big draw attention to yourself panic sound. So he just kind of low says her name, but they don't get a chance. He just gets savagely taken out by the wolfen. And then they come and they get the girlfriend or wife, or whatever she is, last to go. And when they kill her, it's just in a spray of blood and pearls. It looks a lot like every time Batman's parents get killed in an alleyway. So she's gone, and then we cut to our hero and the opening scene closes. And I have been haunted by this scene ever since I've seen it. I love everything about it, every detail. I haven't even talked about how good the music is. It's a little over the top, but it's really also just kind of perfect for the scene. And then the final touch is the shot before we get the cutaway to the scene ending, is the camera drops to the ground and you see the security guard or driver, whatever, you see his hand on the ground, clutching the gun with nothing attached to it, just hand and a wrist and a gun, and the finger on the trigger slowly relaxes, and the shot that he was going to fire that he thought would save him never gets fired, and then we go to the next scene. Just absolutely incredible stuff. So there you have it, my pick for horror's scariest opening scene. Now let's get to the community voting. With somewhere between 60 and 70 votes, we have Urban Legend and the opening gas station scene with the great Brad Dourif and Natalie Wood's daughter, Natasha Gregson Wagner. So the thing, we've talked about this movie and this scene actually on this podcast in the past, so I'm not going to go into great detail here, but one thing I do want to mention is I forgot how really crazy and off kilter the camera and the lighting is in this scene, but man, they just do it right. it's so easy to do the crazy camera movement thing wrong and just have everything be disorienting and you can't really tell where you are. That is not what happens here. This movie does such a good job of having the camera put the viewer in the spirit of being really panicked and really just wanting to escape and feeling under threat, but not being like a chaos and a haphazard camera movement. And the lighting, the flashes of light in the background that are happening kind of at all angles, just really well done. Now, with an equal number of votes, we have Mario Bava's legendary Black Sunday, one of my favorite horror movies and favorite horror directors of all time. I love that this got a significant number of votes. This opening scene with the witch, quote unquote, witch being put to death, the amazing Barbara Steele, the mask of Satan, that famous spiked mask. And there's just two things to hit on real quick. I mean, so much has been written about this movie. If you're interested in it, you know, you can find so much great material in depth. When we do countdown episodes like this, there's just no time to dwell enough to really do justice, except for this is what the community thinks, and that's the important thing here. But there are two quick things I want to jump on here. First is, I love scenarios where there's one person being hemmed in and judged by a big group of people, and the person is outnumbered by the whole crowd, but all of your attention and all of the power of the scene seems to go to that one person. They're accusing her of, you know, satanic worship and witchcraft. They're going to put her to death, and she's like, they're like, "We repudiate you." And she's like, "You repudiate me? I repudiate you. I'm going to live forever. I'm going to come after you and your family. You can't stop me." And it's her charisma and her power that really flips the whole dynamic of the scene, where the mob seems under threat. You know, in like the original Frankenstein movie, when the torches come out and the mob comes after Frankenstein, even though he's theoretically the creature of the movie, theoretically the threat, I mean, they're the threat. We're scared for Frankenstein's creature by the end of that movie. The mob is definitely going to win, you can tell. The best scenario for him is to escape. But in this circumstance, she's a danger to them. Sure, they're going to take her out now, but she knows things they don't know. So that's the first thing, is I like when that dynamic flips and the person that is supposedly the one being, you know, judged or being, you know, hemmed in is actually the one holding like some kind of greater power. And then the other amazing thing, obviously, is just the atmosphere of this is second to none. It's a perfect Halloween season watch movie. But the shadows and the way the light plays on the spiked mask when they first hold it out and then bring it towards her, and then that gruesome hammer blow that puts the nailed mask into her face. It's people complain all the time that old movies aren't scary anymore. Even some of like the movies that I cringe to think of as old, like Fright Night or whatever. I mean, these are going on 30, 40 years old now, right? So they're like way further back in time than people who grew up with those movies want to feel like they are. And there are a lot of people who are teenagers right now who find movies like that slow, who think like Lost Boys is ridiculous or whatever. Imagine going even further back to the Black Sunday era and having a scene like this still have this much punch. Just incredible. We had an equal number of votes for Darkness Falls. Most of the people voting for this were emphasizing that they were not voting for the movie, that they thought the movie wasn't that great, but that the opening scene is excellent. And a lot of them had pretty, you know, personal memories of being particularly terrified by how this movie starts. Next, we have Twilight Zone, the movie, with You Want to See Something Scary, the scene with Albert Brooks and Dan Aykroyd. You know, I got to be honest with you. This scene did get me when I was a kid. But of all the scenes we're going to talk about today, this is the one that holds up least for me. the dynamic is good still, which is you Dan Aykroyd is so chill with his friend. They're so obviously just joking around that tonally it doesn't feel like he should be a threat. It feels like the threat should be from outside and not from the guy in the passenger seat. And that kind of misdirection still works. It's the appearance of the creature and the attack that just, I don't know, design-wise, it's not nearly as big as I remember, but like a classic scene, of course. Now, after that, and this is the first big surprise of the voting to me, was that there were more than a couple hundred votes for the beginning of Midsommar, the Florence Pugh movie. And, you know, there have been quite a number of arguments about this movie on our pages over the years, both for and against. But most of the arguments focus on the weirdness of the film, and then, you know, a perceived slowness of the film to some people. And then a lot of people really focusing on the ending and that creepy smile and incredible acting by Florence. And the whole bear thing and the creepy yellow triangle house and all of that. And I can't remember a single time in all the years since that movie came out of any kind of substantial discussion of the beginning of the movie as the scariest moment in the movie until now, which is one of the reasons I'm really glad I did this vote, because there were so many interesting comments of people. You could almost feel like they wanted to vote for this because they remembered the feeling of it. And then mid typing their comments or their votes, they realized, wait a minute, the scariest moments in Midsommar are in the beginning of Midsommar. It's almost like we all collectively remembered this ourselves together during this voting. So I went back and watched the opening scene. Now, I saw Midsommar in the theater. I remember having some problems with it. I remember thinking that it's, you know, I had to give it so many points for trying things in terms of daytime horror and just psychology that you don't usually see. So I'm like, this is clearly a movie I'm going to have to sit with and come back to. But I do remember that I almost wasn't ready for the movie to continue after the beginning. And then when the whole movie was done and I walked out of the theater, I didn't even think of the beginning ever again. There's some kind of weird amnesia that happens because of the rest of the movie is so strange and so wild. And so like a detective story, except for you trying to figure out what the hell even happened. Like, is it supernatural? Is it not? Is it in her head? There's just so much going on. And then why? Like, why are these characters acting this way? Like, why? Like, they make really weird decisions. There's just goofy scenes, let's be honest. So it's like it washes away the grimness of the beginning. But the beginning of this movie is so sinister, and it was Fincher-esque the way the camera kind of comes up the stairs with like emergency responders walking around. You're just seeing their feet, blurs of them in the background. It almost had like a Halloween Kills kind of vibe. I know that's weird to say. And then the camera's following this pipe that's going from the car in the garage up the stairs and then splits. And you can, when the pipe splits into two different directions, that's when your brain really goes on a first time watch, uh-oh, this is not what I'm expecting. And then we discover what's happening, and then the incredibly creepy visual of Danny's sister with the improvised mask over her face, and then the camera pan up to those helpless messages on her laptop above her head because she's on the ground leaning against, I think it's her desk, and the laptop's on top of the desk or the computer screen, I can't remember what it is. And then you just see these messages of Danny trying to blow up, like, and this sinister message that her sister sends Danny saying something like, everything's black, mom and dad are coming with me, goodbye, something terrible like that. But it's the visual of her leaning on the desk and the face that visual is the only modern analog to the visual of a movie that we'll talk about way up high in the voting here that I'll get to in a second. I'll wrap around and come back to that. But yeah, I'm really glad that the Midsommar thing was here just so that I could explore the fact that it's one of the few impactful opening scenes to a movie that you don't remember when the movie's over, really, because of what the rest of the movie does. And maybe that's better, because it could be really traumatizing. Now, next, higher in the voting. I'm not going to tell you the movie first. The funny thing is, I'm going to tell you the quote, and I don't even know if I'm going to get it right. I have seen so many variations on this, and I haven't rewatched it recently, so... It goes, "Beware the moon, lads, and stick to the roads. Stay off the moors." Of course, this is the legendary An American Werewolf in London. And when you search it online, it's like, stay off the road, stay off the moors, keep clear of the moors, stay away from the moors. Like, everyone's got their own version of it. And the reason I bring that up is it's one of those few movies that becomes mythological. Like, there are so many people who remember that different ways in their head because it's one of those stories that just, like, sank into the culture. And it's one of those, you're telling stories around a campfire and next thing you know, everyone's got hooks for hands hanging off of cars at, like, Lover's Lane. And to achieve that level of mythology with an original film is incredible. From the slaughtered lamb to, I mean... Just the atmosphere of this is one of the few, like, kind of color homages to what it must have felt like to see a Universal movie back when you were, when Universal movies were being made in the 30s and 40s and actually being scared by them. But when the two friends finally come face to face with the actual werewolf, and Jack gets just savage, just gets ragdolled and torn apart, thrown to the ground, chewed up. You have this amazing moment where David just runs for his life and turns around feeling guilty, you know, partially through the run. And, you know, the odd thing is that's kind of the worst of both worlds. Like, how bad are human instincts sometimes? Because to just keep running... While the wolf, sure, the wolf was probably going to catch him anyway, but if you take off right away while the wolf's, like, having dinner, maybe you'll get away. Maybe you would just run in a straight line. Maybe you've run fast enough. Who knows? But, and if you had just stayed, if you had never run and you'd help defend your friend from the jump, maybe the two of you would have had a chance. Probably not. But to run away, to have the one guy try to fight off, to have Jack try to fight off the werewolf, and get totally outmatched, and then to come back just to be the second course in the dinner and fall, you know, on the ground, chewed up as well next to your friend. It's such an interesting moral dilemma, kind of tucked inside such a classic atmospheric scary scene. All right, now let's get to the heavy hitters. The rest of these remaining movies all got hundreds and hundreds of votes. First, it's going to be The Ring, and it's the closet scene in particular. And I want to, this is interesting to me because there are so many scenes on this list that are very short. Like, the Midsommar opening scene can't be more than a couple of minutes long, but then there are other things where people were considering an opening scene and that it went on for a while. Like, the closet flashback moment that everyone's remembering as the opening of The Ring, even though the opening is scary enough, like the fake outs and the water in the door and the TV, you know, stuff, all that is scary. But it's when people were voting for this, they weren't voting for that. They were voting for the closet moment. And that happens way into the movie. And it got me thinking how few votes were received by Final Destination 2. And I think the reason that happens is by the time you get to the log truck moment, is that really the opening scene? I mean, we're like 25 minutes into the movie. It depends on what you're thinking of as the opening scene. Now, I'm agnostic on this. Like, it could be long, it could be short. I feel like when the credits come up used to be the marker, but people have really started to screw with that in movies now. So I guess the way I think of it is when we cut to new characters or cut to characters we already know, but in a new circumstance. And by that definition, the closet moment in the ring isn't technically the opening scene, but it doesn't matter. I'm just here to report the votes. And most of the people who voted for this mentioned the closet scene. I just found it fascinating what we even consider like the opening scene, because not until I was sorting through and sifting through these votes that I really started to realize, because I wanted to go back and rewatch some if I hadn't seen recently, or at least the ones I had time to catch, right? And, you know, Black Sunday is really quick. And then, you know, other ones were, you know, very long into the movie. So anyway, the ring got a ton of votes. A lot of people, I mean, the fun, one of the parts of the voting that I find the most are special to me are when people vote with their personal memories of what the theater was like, or what the room full of their friends were like when they first, or what happened when they were alone and then they couldn't go to sleep, or, you know, whatever impact that is. That's really the magic of horror movies. And I gotta tell you, there are movies that are higher up in the voting here that didn't get nearly the amount of comments that the ring scene got in terms of personal memories of how it affected people. And of course, the body double of Amber Tamblyn that the legendary Rick Baker made, weird that we were just talking about American Werewolf, is second to none. I mean, there are so many people who thought that was an actual actress with makeup, like doing that expression, or that it was, you know, CGI. I don't know what people thought, but I certainly, when I first watched it, didn't clock that it was an entire body double. Now, next we have the opening scene of Jaws, and we're about to head into our top five. And it's interesting that Jaws did not crack the top five, because when you search scariest opening scenes online, or when you go to aggregator sites or like sites like IMDb and find how they're rated, Jaws is almost always the top one or two. And it doesn't bother me that it's here. There's, to me, as good as the opening and as legendary as the opening scene of Jaws is, I don't think it's nearly the best scene in the movie. I mean, the best scene in the movie might be Quint's monologue, but there are so many other great scenes that happen in this movie, and great, like that famous zoom in on Roy Scheider. There's so many. Even some of the funnier scenes with Hooper, and just the camaraderie scenes, the scenes with the mayor, right? They come to my mind for some reason more than the opening scene. So maybe it's just an artifact of, you know, sitting down to watch this movie for the first time in the summer of 75. And that opening scene is sending you a signal that this movie is going to make you scared to go into the water again. It's a great scene, absolutely perfectly executed. I wouldn't change a single thing about it. It's just interesting to me that it didn't crack our community top five. Speaking of the top five, kicking us off is Wes Craven's Scream, the famous Drew Barrymore phone call scene. This is one of the most discussed scenes in all of horror, so I'm just not going to rehash a lot of this in detail for this. The one thing that I will say is I sense that there's some Scream fatigue out there, and that's natural. One, it's natural anytime you have any kind of horror franchise that has any comedic elements in it. And two, it happens when a franchise goes on and on and on. And now that we're heading into Scream 7, we might be getting to that point for some horror fans. But the thing is, regardless of how you feel about the franchise or how tired you might be of it, this opening scene of the original Scream is an undeniable masterwork. Just like, not forget the influence, forget all the stuff, forget all the quotes you remember from it and just all that. Just the idea of someone sitting down and conceiving this as their first moments to launch a franchise with, is just so brilliant. Like, Wes Craven, hats off. Okay, next, in fourth place, we have Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead remake opening scene. And I also want to give a shout out to the credits that roll immediately after the opening scene. I weirdly saw this movie overnight at a place I was working long ago on a TV over the bar. And I was kind of riveted by the opening scene. I was alone in the building at that point. And then I had stuff to do, though. It was work. So when the opening scene concluded, I wandered away to go do my stuff, and I was listening to that Johnny Cash music kick in. I caught a couple of the visuals in the credits from the corner of my eye. And then I was like, I'll come back, you know, when the movie restarts. Just I can get something done in the, you know, minute and a half that the credits are rolling. And I didn't make it more than 10 feet away from the TV. The song kind of crept down the back of my neck. I was hearing the noises come from the TV, and I wheeled back around like I was hypnotized, and I came back, and it's my favorite moment of the whole movie. The one part of the movie I thought was skippable is now my absolute favorite moment of the movie. So as great as the opening scene is, the credits that roll after that have a special place for me. But the opening scene itself is pretty much perfect, right? You're starting out with, I mean, it starts a little, slow's got a bad connotation, but there's not as much mayhem as you remember in the first 2 minutes. It's establishing who this family is. It's getting to know Sarah Polley a little bit, and then you're spending time with them going to sleep. And then it's in the morning when all hell breaks loose, when they wake up and the daughter attacks them. But what's amazing here is it becomes a chain of the father sees the daughter bloody and wants to help her, even though she's clearly a threat. He just can't register that. He's just rightfully, like any parent would, being like, there's something wrong with her, I gotta help her. And then the exact same thing happens with Sarah Polley after her husband gets bit, and she just wants to help him and can't register that he's a threat either. And you can see how this chain is going to spread like the fastest communicable disease. And, you know, there are moments in the mayhem of this opening scene, particularly one memorable one where a car kind of just blows an intersection, crashes into some gas pumps and blows up like a gas station while there's this beautiful overhead shot of Sarah Polley driving. And, you know, I know I overthink things, right? But like I was thinking in a zombie movie, why would a car just go off the road? Is it can't be that the person in the car like died and turned to a zombie. I mean, I guess theoretically they could have just been driving along and had a heart attack, but then they could have driven into the gas pumps anyway without the zombie step, right? If you just die at the wheel and your car just goes plummeting somewhere, then, you know, whatever. And I wonder if the scenario, or at least the scenario I like to have in my head, is that someone got, there was like a, let's say it's a couple, and the couple, someone in one of the couple gets injured, and there's mayhem breaking out, and they get in the car together, and they're like, let's drive out of this danger and get you to a hospital. And while they're driving, the person in the car turned and attacked the other person, and that's why the car crashes. But that's my point, is you really get a sense of how fast the virality of this thing is, and how many little tragedies are going to break loose. And aside from just visually how good it is with the white shirts and the walls and the blood and the really bright daytime horror of it, which is hard to pull off and make look realistic, there are two other amazing fucking things about this scene. It's how it widens out from the little domestic drama when your daughter is dead and your husband's attacking you and you're just trying to get out and try to figure out what's happening with your family. And you get out the window and you just blink your eyes in the sun and realize it's not your problem. It's the world. There's no one to call. There's nowhere to go. It's happening to everyone. It's not just you. That visually, the presentation of that in this movie is so, so well done. But I think an underrated moment of this movie and in general in like the space of horror, because it's one of the moments that like really sticks with me, is when her husband is chasing her down the road. And here's this person, you've married each other, you've had a child together, you've devoted your lives to each other for better or for worse, and you're like, you know, you have all these memories in your head of you know, what this person means to you. And like, you know, if there was someone who inexplicably who I loved and I was close to, and they just all of a sudden left without saying a word and just went out and, you know, into their car, and I, no matter what I was saying to them, they wouldn't listen, and then they're just driving off, I would run after them, but I would run until the car, I couldn't catch the car, and I would just stay focused on that point in the distance until the car was gone, wondering what the hell was happening. But in this scene, the husband is running after her, and it looks like he's focused on her the way you would be with someone until he sees someone else to eat. And then he just veers off, and you realize they're just animals now. I mean, I don't even like the connotation of that. It's even worse, because animals can be super affectionate. They're just hungry now, right? So his veer off to go attack someone standing on their lawn while his wife, that he doesn't even know anymore, drives away, is haunting to me. Now, in third place, we have the biggest surprise in all of the voting, which is David Robert Mitchell's 2015 movie, It Follows. Now, I just don't know what to make of this movie. I personally love it. I also love Under the Silver Lake. So I'm obviously a fan of this director. There are so many people who hate this movie. There's, you know, one block of them who just think of it as the STD horror movie. That's so basic. I don't know even how to deal with that. Then there's other people who feel like it's just overhyped or boring or whatever. Don't like the villain, don't like the innovation, etc. I don't want to speak for the critics of it. I've seen a lot of the arguments, but you can't passionately talk from the side that you're not on. So, but I know that it's a divisive movie, but the fact that it got so many votes, and there's so many people really gave thoughtful comments on it, but they had a different tone to them. There was a tone to a lot of the other votes. Here, I'll give you an example. Back in the Scream voting, Nathaniel Bacon had written with his vote for Scream, he said, "There's something so savage and cruel about the way Ghostface teases and tortures Drew Barrymore. The evolution of the phone call is perfectly written and perfectly acted. And Wes Craven does some of his best direction with the tense buildup and terrifying chase. Then her parents coming in and being just seconds away from saving her, only to hear her being murdered on the phone with no way to stop it. Right up into the crescendo of her mother's scream upon discovering her corpse hanging in the tree. I still remember it gave me literal goosebumps the first time I saw it." Now, you can tell by that comment and a lot of the votes for Scream, or most of the movies in the top here, felt similar. They talked about the emotional reaction, it gave me goosebumps, but they also talked about the craft of it, like how it's made, how it's paced. You know, they were taking it in as like a movie. But the comments that came with the It Follows voting were different. There was one comment by Sydney Bailey where she says, "This opening scene made me so uncomfortable. I wish I could have unwatched it. I felt so bad for the poor girl, and I felt like I wanted to help her get out, but there was nothing I could do." See, that's what I mean, is that's not talking like a movie. That's talking almost like you're watching something true crime or real, or even something just out your window. There's something about the way this scene is and kind of the structure of the whole movie, because one of the obvious ironies of this title, It Follows, is when the character we meet in the beginning of the movie is running away. And I'm sorry if you haven't seen it, but I can't walk through the whole scene. The podcast will go too long. But basically, there's a girl, she's running away, she gets in her car or her dad's car, I don't know which, and kind of drives away, and she's clearly trying to get away from something, ends up on a beach, and then something really horrible, visually terrifying transpires. She has a very sad kind of moment on the phone with her dad that's very similar to Heather's moment in Blair Witch when she's talking to the camera. She's just like, I want to tell everyone I'm sorry and I love them. And you see that, like, that tear coming down her eye. It has kind of that vibe. And then she's just decimated on the beach, just like broken on the beach in horrible ways. And that's basically the opening scene. But the thing about it is there's a sense of dread hanging over it. She feels doomed and she feels alone. And the obvious joke is she's alone most of the time we're seeing her in a movie called It Follows. Well, what's following her? The camera is following her. The It Follows notion might be just as much about the director and the camera. And honestly, I mean, if the camera's following her, that means we're following her. So, like, we're the ones following this character in the movie called It Follows while she heads to this horrible fate. And we can't do anything but experience it. And it really does kind of tweak that kind of feeling in us that when you see someone in distress, you want to help. But what I think the trick of this, the feeling of this is, and why one of the reasons perhaps it got so many votes, is it makes you feel helpless in a way that even theoretically scarier scenes may not. And also because there is no explanation at all of anything that's happening, you have that horror movie feeling. So, like, the movie we just talked about, Dawn of the Dead, right? As soon as the daughter attacks, they don't know. Sarah Polley and her husband don't know what's happening. And when she runs out into the world, the people in the world, they don't know what's happening. But we absolutely know what's happening. It's a zombie outbreak. Like, as soon as we get that one key visual and the daughter lunges and bites her dad's neck, we know exactly what's happening. And in almost every horror movie, like in Jaws, when someone's, you know, skinny dipping in the water and all of a sudden they're getting dragged back and forth and screaming or whatever, and then they get sucked under, it's a shark attack, right? Like, you know what's happening. There's no explanation to the events in the opening of It Follows. She runs out of her house and then runs back into her house and then runs back out of her house. Like, we don't know what's happening. She drives away looking back behind her shoulder, but there's nothing in the rearview mirror at all. So it's that complete lack of explanation, no clues given to the audience, that I think is one of the things that makes this really special. But anyway, big surprise to me that this was in third place. I never expected to see It Follows in the top three of any vote we ever do, just because I feel like there's a big chunk of people who hate it almost as much as they hate, like, The Babadook or whatever. All right, so for our second place finisher, we have 28 Weeks Later. Andy Kent kicked off the voting on our Facebook page by saying 28 Weeks Later for me. It goes from 0 to 100 in an instant, and it's not only the speed at which everything has gotten totally foobar, it's her face in the window when she realizes he isn't coming back to help her. A lesson in how to advance a story with a turbocharged sequel. Now, legendarily, Danny Boyle, the director of 28 Days Later, helped to direct the opening scene of 28 Weeks Later, but not the rest of it. And you can feel the difference in the rest of the movie, although I like all of 28 Weeks Later. But, you know, there's a lot of talk about fast zombies. Like, should zombies be fast or slow? There's a lot of talk about horror villain speeds in general. The famous, you know, Jason just walking, Michael Myers just walking kind of notion. But we never talk about the speed of the victims or the speed of the escapees. And in this case, after the zombie attack, Don sets the land speed record for horror movie escapees. And, you know, it's interesting because we talk about final girls and survivors in horror a lot. And there's like an honorific feel to that title, like final girl, right? Like, you made it, you're the survivor, you're tough. Nothing can kill Ripley. She just goes on. And when they try to kill her, they just bring her back, right? Like, but is surviving the key actually? Because Don gets out and survives. He's not going to survive the movie, but survives this scene. But just survival isn't enough. it has to be survival with honor. It has to be survival on some kind of terms that you can live with. And I think it's interesting that this movie points that out in such a like bold and visually unforgettable way. And it's not just his family that he's leaving. I mean, even the guy at the boat, he leaves everybody behind because he's just faster. And maybe he's just more panicked, right? Maybe it's not even right to like necessarily judge someone in such an extreme circumstance, although I do judge him, to be honest. But this is the kind of thing a really, really well-done horror movie can make us grapple with. Maybe it's not as simple as being the final girl or final guy or whatever, the survivor. It's how you do it. And then the other thing that just has to be mentioned here is the music. I mean, the camera work, that's a given. That's amazing. The shots, her face in the window watching Don run away, like the panic on his face, the zombies gathering behind him in that running, like, you know, stampede in the background, coming closer and closer. All the visuals are great, but the music, I mean, I'm hearing the music in my head as I'm describing this scene to you. In all honesty, I expected this movie to be on the list. I don't think I expected it to be this high on the list, but it's a great, great scene. And now we have our unsurprising winner, 2002's Ghost Ship. And when I said at the beginning that there was some controversy with this, I've never really known how to handle this in the voting. Basically, I take all the posts we do on all our pages, like Instagram stories, threads, Facebook, etc., and then I count them up. And, you know, I take the reactions as votes, and the comment as a separate vote if you bother to put a comment with an action, with a reaction. So you can actually vote twice, theoretically, because the comments are the most important thing to me. The entire Horror Weekly idea was started as giving horror fans a place to have a voice, to have real conversations online, and not just you know, get interviews and get talked at by horror celebrities and horror directors and etc. I wanted horror fans to have a voice, so there's a reward, extra vote for having a comment. But there were tons of people who voted for it, won by a good margin. Not as big as I first expected when the voting started, because it was a runaway in the first hour, but the 28 weeks later and a couple of the other movies closed a gap, but still, it won by a bit. But there were also a bunch of votes, comments, I guess I would say, against it. So there were people who mentioned Ghost Ship, and they said that the opening scene was cool, and that the opening scene was spectacular and gory, but the opening scene was absolutely not scary. And the question was, scariest horror movie opening? And that didn't happen with any of the other votes. There weren't like, you know, 50, 60 people who were like, no, the Scream opening scene isn't any good. Or there weren't like 100 people making comments of, no, you know, 28 weeks later, is that scene's not scary. This is the only movie in the voting that got a huge, not huge, but a decent number of people commenting that they don't think Ghost Ship's opening scene is scary. Now, that was interesting to me, right? So Ghost Ship, even if I had taken those votes and like count, like backed them out, like if they had negated the other positive vote somehow, Ghost Ship still won by enough of a margin to just win. But I've never had to think of that before in our voting of, you know, what happens if people are actively saying things against the premise of it being there. So Ghost Ship obviously is just like, if you were a film director and you went to sleep and you had a nightmare that looked like this, you would wake up and you would sell every possession you had to make that movie, just to make that scene. It's such a genius idea for a scene, and it's pretty well executed. And honestly, the biggest surprise of that scene to me is the moment, the visual that gives me the biggest chills. It's not like the dismembered, you know, grid-like Resident Evil bodies chopped, falling apart, and the torso crawling across the deck of the ship, and the famous, you know, captain looking, you know, with his head when the girl looks up at him. Like, the most chilling thing is when the wire snaps tight after it, and you're just looking at the wire, the bloody wire, and it's just like vibrating in the air, with losing the tension of the energy of what just happened as it slowly becomes taut and still again, is just such a creepy visual. But regardless, Ghost Ship won, which I expected when I started the voting. I'm just glad there were enough interesting votes for the rest of the positions to make it all worth it. And speaking of, I just want to give a quick couple honorable mention shout-outs to movies that didn't get enough voting, but I feel like just can't be passed by, which is the incredible opening of Argento's Suspiria, with the magnificent music, the one-of-a-kind visuals, that iconic, you know, crash through the stained glass ceiling scene, and you know, the getting pulled taut by the rope, and the, I mean, all of that is just, if you haven't seen Suspiria, if you watch the opening scene, I just can't imagine not watching the rest of the movie. But there's nothing else like it in horror cinema. It's truly one of a kind. And it, the whole lead up to it, the rain storm, the taxi ride, Jessica Harper's great performance, just so good. And then the other shout out I want to give is to the movie The Empty Man. Now, this opening scene goes on pretty long, which might be the same reason, like Final Destination, it didn't get a lot of votes. Another reason is maybe just that a lot of people didn't see it. I don't hear it talked about very often. But The Empty Man, although the opening segment is long, is again one of those one-of-a-kind opening scenes that is so sinister. The moment when one of the hikers falls through a hole into a cave, and then his friend comes down to rescue him and just sees him sitting there like cross-legged Buddhism style in front of this four-armed, creepy, long-dead skeleton. And when his friend tries to ask him, what's going on, are you hurt, and reaches out to touch him, and just him whispering so low under his breath, if you touch me, you're going to die. And then how sad he is, where you can tell he's some kind of possessed, some kind of trapped in there, some kind of horrible thing. But then, and I don't want to spoil it, because if you haven't seen it, it would be a true crime and shame to spoil this for you. But what happens after that, to close out the opening scene, oh my good Lord. I mean, I am a little mixed on the rest of The Empty Man. I've talked about it briefly in the past. I think it's really well done. I've seen it a couple times and it holds up on rewatch. So I'm team The Empty Man for sure. But there's something a little gray about it. I find my attention wandering from some of it. And I don't think it's the movie's fault. It might just be it's trying to do something. And, you know, the way it connects with me is I love Bleak, don't get me wrong, but it's repetitive Bleak, I guess. It's making the same point in a couple different ways, but it's still the same point, and I'm like zoning out a little bit as it makes the point again. I mean, it's called The Empty Man, so like, life is bleak. We put it in the title, we get it. But the opening scene is a mini movie masterpiece of itself. It's almost like one of the greatest horror shorts buried inside a movie. So there you have it, horror movies' scariest opening scenes, as voted on by you, the Horror Weekly community. Thank you to everyone who participated and commented. It was amazing to go through them and see the intelligent and passionate discussions going on about this subject. I want to give a quick shout out to Douglas, who left a 5-star review on Apple for this podcast and said, in part, each episode begins similarly with the statement, we asked a million or so horror fans, and I'm immediately engaged because I am one of those fans. I have been personally quoted more than once on the podcast for comments I've left on various polls. It is the only podcast that paired with the Facebook page makes me feel included, validated, and kindred. I love that word, kindred. I love the review. Thank you for leaving that review. So appreciated. That actually made my day, because that's exactly what we're trying to do here. I also want to give a special shout out to Antonia in our subscriber group. And if you want to subscribe and help directly support us and directly talk to me and give feedback for podcast ideas for podcast episodes or segments or anything horror related that your heart desires, you can join the group and talk to us directly. I'll put a link in the show notes for that. But I want to give a shout out to Antonia for posting her horror vibes coffee shots, where she started talking about local horror themed spots. I mean, as we head into Halloween season, things are going to look more and more horror. And I realize we talk a lot about movies and TV shows and sometimes books here, but horror out in the world, like the haunts that are going to spring up and like the mazes and the things, I really want to incorporate a little into the vibe of the podcast, at least for the season. And it's Antonia who gave me the idea. So thank you so much. And thank you to all the subscribers and supporters in there. And thank you to you all for listening. That's it for us. Until next Wednesday, have a great horror week.